did nine counties, and that was not good from a morale perspective when you tell people that they cannot go home during the ice storms, but it did give us an opportunity to dry run some new facilities that we have that they're flex facilities aimed at if the site's uninhabitable for an extended period of time from Fukushima. So we now have the capability to house about 90 people, sleeping facilities, cooking facilities, those kinds of things. We did have an evaluation of our plant site. We typically would have about every 2 years an evaluation from the Institute of Nuclear Power Operations, or INPO, but about every fifth cycle we get a World Association of Nuclear Operators evaluation, or WANO evaluation. Same as an INPO evaluation largely, except that they have a higher international contingent on the team. The team's about 21 people that came in for a period of about 3 to 4 weeks. We finished our 21st refueling outage, and we did have one mid-cycle outage this year, or sorry, in 2014. We completed our dry cask storage pad, and the picture there is an artist rendering of what the casks will look like, superimposed over a picture of the site and its basic location. We did get NRC approval for our upgrade to our fire standards. We've now adopted NFPA 805 as a fire standard. I think we had a presentation from a member of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission about three quarters ago, I think it was, on the NFPA 805. So we're doing that transition on one of the early plants to do so. We initiated a new technical support center. That is a facility we'd use just during an emergency. And we are, since we're building two new plants, we're going to combine one technical support center to facilitate emergency for all three units. So we've actually had a chance to practice in the new facility already. We have ordered a new reactor vessel head for Unit 1. We plan to replace that in the 2017 refueling outage. We also had a corporate evaluation. So we have plant evaluations, and periodically INPO or WANO will do a corporate evaluation. We are one of the last facilities to get a corporate evaluation because we truly don't have a corporate structure. We have one operating facility, so really corporate is at the site location. But we have now had a corporate evaluation. And we responded to the flex orders, or the Fukushima orders, and we'll cover a little bit more of that in a few minutes. Or now. Flex. Flex really is not an acronym for anything. It really stands for flexible. So the industry's response to Fukushima is to have flexible capabilities to respond to any kind of an extended loss of offsite power. And we have three phases. So we have to deal initially with just installed equipment, just site resources for about 6 hours. And we transition to equipment we would have stored or staged at a couple of different locations at the site. And a couple of different locations because you have to assume that one might be taken out by whatever is causing this extended loss of offsite power, whether it's a prolonged heavy flood. We're not likely to get a tsunami since we're 380 feet above sea level. But there are some things that could impact offsite power, tornadoes, hurricanes, those kind of things. So we have to deal with those. Phase two, we would transition to that flex equipment, and then phase three, at greater than 24 hours, we're allowed to rely on some regional response centers, which have some capability to either truck or airlift things to the site. And we'll talk about where those regional response centers are in just a minute. This is some of our flex equipment that's now stored in a seismic building. So I have two pumper trucks, and those pumper trucks aren't necessarily for fire. They really are pumper trucks that are dual use. They can fight a fire, but the pumpers on those trucks are very valuable to us, and I can get water from places to places with a pumper truck that I couldn't with other things. They have the ability to take suction on the lake, for example, so I can get lake water to many places. You got a picture there on the left-hand side of a 80-kilowatt diesel generator, and the bottom is a 1,000 kW turbine generator. We do have some snowcats, not aimed at snow and ice, but really aimed at traversing areas that have been upset by earthquakes or down trees, those kind of things. I've got two of those. Some large booster pumps, and I've got a new front-end loader dedicated to the Flex facility. We have other front-end loaders, but this one's dedicated to Flex. And you can see just a list of some of the other equipment that we have there. These are the two regional centers, both of which are open. One of them is in Phoenix. Obviously, that one's going to service the West. And we've got one in Memphis, which will service the East and Midwest. We're party, they're tied to the Eastern facility. So they have four sets of Flex equipment there. The idea is that they have one set that would be undergoing maintenance and testing, and the other sets would be available to use. And we have had to make sure that we're compatible with their equipment. The last thing you want is for them to have to buy a generator and you not be able to plug and play when it gets to your site. You don't want to have to wire things. So everything we have is compatible with the Flex equipment. This is just a listing of NRC and IMPO inspections that we had in 14. This does not include the routine resident inspectors. Some of these will be week-long, some of them will be multi-weeks long, involving multiple inspectors. It was a busy year from an NRC perspective and a busy year from IMPO, and all of those came out favorably. And this is, if you go onto the NRC's website, they publish a matrix that tells you how the plants are doing, and this is just the matrix for our facility, and you can see that it's all green. And 2015 preview, the things that we're focusing on right now are we've got IMPO and NRC Flex audits happening this month and in July, and then we've got a refueling outage which starts in the fall. We've got a lot of modifications we need to take care of in that refueling outage. And these are the areas of strategic focus for Unit 1. I would say that some of these are applicable also to the new units. Workforce, we know we're planning for a significant amount of retirements, so we're working on knowledge transfer and strategic hiring. So we want to hire people that are willing to come here, willing to stay here, and we're working on getting the knowledge from the folks who are retiring to the new folks. We are looking at equipment reliability. As human performance improves, then equipment shows up as an issue. And so we're working through some single point vulnerability issues. So if one thing can trip the turbine or trip the reactor, we want to make sure that we've got two. Equipment obsolescence. A lot of the vendors that we use don't support their equipment any longer. Either they've gotten out of the business, they've closed their doors, they don't support nuclear stamps any longer, those kind of things. And so we have a full-time dedicated team that look at equipment obsolescence issues and where can we get those parts and pieces made if we can't get them from the original equipment manufacturer. And then we're looking at the next life extension. So within the next 2 years, we will probably put the team together to work on an extension beyond 2042. And you're allowed to have a 40-year license at any one point in time. So in general, you would operate for 20 years of your current 40-year license, tack on another 20 years to have a 40-year license. So we would look at an extension of an additional 20 years, so take you to 2062. This is, again, the artist rendering of what the spent fuel storage facility will look like. Each one of the containers can hold 37 fuel assemblies. Those containers are licensed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, so these are licensed containers. We intend to get them from the Holtec Corporation. So the premise is you will transfer fuel that has been out of the reactor for at least 5 years, transfer it from the spent fuel pool underwater into a stainless steel cask. The cask will then be dewatered, drained, and it will be transferred in a transfer pack, which is concrete, to this pad, and you'll put a concrete overpack around it. And it doesn't require pumps, fans, it's just natural convection cooling. The only thing you have to ensure is that things like birds aren't making nests in the vents. But you know, relatively low radiation exposure, very, very simple. It's a great technology. And this is what the transport machine looks like. So fully loaded, the cask weighs almost as much as a fully loaded 767. On to new nuclear endeavors. The new nuclear plants, those are units 2 and 3. They're Westinghouse, AP, or advanced passive, roughly 1,000 megawatt reactors. That's why they call them AP1000s. We will actually get about 1,137 megawatts out of each. Staffing, we've been about hiring our permanent staff, and you can see there we're up to about 577 SCENG employees. You can see the rough breakdown of where those folks are. And the consortium that is doing the construction, they've got about 3,700 employees on site between CB&I, Westinghouse, and their subcontractors. So parking spaces that are premium in Jenkinsville now. We had a recent announcement. We filed with the Public Service Commission for a new construction schedule and a new capital cost structure. And so we announced delays largely due to delivery of structural modules, and specifically submodules from a supplier called Chicago Bridge and Iron, which is one of the consortium partners that's building the plant. And I'll show you a little bit about these structural modules in a few minutes. But when we talk about structural modules, it's modules CA01 through 05 and then 20. So those six are the big six structural modules. So we announced new in-service dates, which would be June of 19 and June of 20. And then the cost in future dollars, so that you're adding the escalation, is about $6.827 billion. So we're about $514 million over our original filing. We made that original filing in 2008, and it was approved by the Public Service Commission of South Carolina in 2009, February of 2009. These are those big six structural modules. These are five of the big six structural modules. All five of these go inside the containment vessel. Containment vessel is a large steel cylinder, about 1 3/4 inches thick. And these parts and pieces actually all get fitted together and then welded together and form the civil structure of all of the components inside of that containment vessel. And then CA20, the other one I talked to, actually goes outside of the containment vessel and forms a large portion of the auxiliary building, and I'll show that to you in just a minute. Now, these are just what they call the big structural modules. There are lots of modules on the facility. These are the big six structural modules. As a result of some problems at that CB&I Lake Charles facility in beautiful Lake Charles, Louisiana, they have made the decision to move the fabrication of some of those modules to other places. So SMCI in Florida is now fabricating some. Our shield building, which will surround the containment vessel, while originally premised to be at Lake Charles, is going to be moved to Newport News Industries in Virginia. And we're moving some of the modules out to Oregon Ironworks in Oregon, and then Toshiba and IHI in Japan in the Tokyo area. Here's a view of our site from May of 2014. And the CA20 module that I talked about is actually attached to the big crane, the heavy lift derrick there. So this was in May, just after it was placed in the excavation. That CA20 module is one of the modules. It came in 72 pieces from Lake Charles, and we welded it together inside a building at the site. And we took the end off the building, transported it very slowly outside, set it on a concrete pad, had the Columbia Fire Department come in and wash it down, and then we lifted it with that heavy lift derrick, and over a period of about 4 hours, traversed about 100 feet to place it in place. So it is now in place, along with a number of other modules. And it's not really very visible here, but there's the CA04 module is right in the center of the circle that's next to CA20, and that is the lower bowl of the containment vessel. CA20 is right in the middle of it. CA04 is in the middle of it. And that kind of surrounds the reactor vessel when we place it. You can see some of the ring sections for the containment vessel near the top right. And you can see the lower bowl for Unit 3, and that's just a fabrication area. So CB&I is fabricating that lower bowl from pieces or petals of steel that are very difficult to fabricate. You see the turbine building for Unit 2 is taking shape there near the bottom. And then the transformers eventually will take all the power out and bring emergency power in are located there on a pad that you can see that they're building. Fast forward to December, you can see that the first ring section has now been placed on Unit 2 next to that CA20 module. You can see more of the turbine decks coming together. The superstructure for the turbine building for Unit 3 is actually being fabricated outside the excavation. And the lower bowl for Unit 3 near the top of the page has been placed, so fabricated in place. And you can see the heavy lift, Eric. The tip of it is not visible there, but it is, looks like it's going over a big building. That's our module assembly building, so that's where we put all these modules together. You can see there's a lot of laydown area there for largely structural steel for the turbine building. Each one of those pieces has a GPS locator on it so that we don't have to try to figure out where parts and pieces are. You just call them up on the screen and it tells you exactly where they are, just in case somebody has moved them. And you're starting to see a couple of tents pop up around the site for temporary storage and actually fabrication of components. Top left is the placement of the lower bowl for Unit 2. You can see it goes into a cradle that sits on top of the base mat. The right-hand side is that CA-20 module that's been placed, and you can see the walls are starting to come up around it now. Bottom left is the first ring section that's now been set right next to CA-20. So this is kind of what the nuclear island or the nuclear side of the plant looks like for Unit 2. This is a module being placed inside the containment vessel. So you can see some of the openings or holes in that containment vessel. Those are for penetrations for piping or conduit or personnel access. And this module here, CA-05, is one of those structural modules. So you can see it's been set. This is a view from the top of the turbine deck. You can see that we're working very hard on getting the turbine deck completed. This is a side view of that turbine deck. And if we zoom in a little bit closer, you can actually see feed water heaters that have been placed inside of the condenser. So there are 6 feed water heaters here that have already been placed inside the condenser. Just an aerial view of the site. You can see that there are a lot of tents here. Does not mean the circus has come to town. This means that we're running out of other areas to store things and stage things. So we're erecting these tents. Some of the tents are actually climate controlled, so we can control the temperature and or temperature and humidity. But the site is getting very congested at the tabletop. You can see the cooling towers that are coming along. 2 of the 4 cooling towers are structurally complete. The third one is about 50% structurally complete, and we're just coming out of the ground on the 4th one. So those are coming right along. New transmission. We have about 260 miles of new transmission. It's all going on existing right-of-way, save for 1 6-mile stretch, and all of that property has been acquired. So this is going very well. The company we're using is Pike Electric out of Mount Airy, North Carolina, which is the same company that the consortium used to construct the switchyard. So there was no handoff issues between the switchyard completion and off-site transmission. Main transformer at the top there, you can see it's got 3 single-phase transformers plus a spare. And at the bottom, those are the pads where the transformer will sit. And you can see we've got firewalls erected between each one of the phases to prevent an explosion of one impacting the others. You can effectively utilize your spare. Major equipment manufacturing, anything that costs over, I think it's $10 million, we classify as major equipment. This is the status of fabrication. Green is Unit 2, blue is Unit 3. You can see the current position, so a good chunk of the Unit 2 stuff is already on the site. The reactor coolant pumps for Unit 2, you can see there, those are still undergoing testing. In fact, they're about midway through a 100-day engineering and endurance run that seems to be going pretty well. So most of the stuff for Unit 2 is actually at the site already. These are some major equipment arrivals. I showed some pictures last year, so I tried not to duplicate last year's pictures. You can see one of the 2 steam generators here for Unit 2, about 70 feet long. They ride via ship into the port of Charleston. They come on that specially designed rail car, so this is it arriving at the site. So both of the Unit 2 steam generators are on site. And then we have one pressurizer for Unit 2, and this is the pressurizer arriving. This is actually in the port of Charleston, but it's at the site now. Some other equipment, non-major equipment. We've got aux boiler feed pumps, integrated head package, condensate polishers, all things that are showing up at the site. Which is making our life difficult with storing and staging, which is why we're clearing more area and utilizing a lot of tents. And then operational readiness. I have to have operators ready, not just to operate the units, but I have to have qualified operators, licensed operators, federally licensed operators, just to receive the fuel. And so I've got 2 fully functioning simulators at the site now. We have received our initial accreditation from the National Academy for Nuclear Training. I've got 28 certified instructors. So in order to teach the operators, you have to have instructors who are certified. We've had three generic fundamentals exams. Those are administered by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and just verify you understand things like reactor fundamentals, heat flow, thermodynamics. And we've had 100% pass rate on that. And my initial licensed operator exam dates are May, which is coming up very soon, and then November of 2015. So I've got to have those exams ready. NRC has to help generate the exams. They'll go through a three-phase exam. It's a simulator exam, graded as an individual and as a crew. You get a written exam, and then you get a walkthrough to verify that you can demonstrate certain tasks. So it's a pretty comprehensive exam. Any questions for me? The licensed operators, we're going to run five shifts, and we will have two senior reactor operators on each shift and two reactor operators on each shift at a minimum. So you're looking at least 20. We intend to license. We're counting on some attrition. I've got 21 in the first class. We're planning on somewhere around 16 passing the exam, and then I'll have another 20 in the November class. So I ought to have 30 licenses by the end of the year, and I will run two more classes probably next year. So we'll have plenty of operators to run against.
The other question I have is, you talked about flex between phase 1, phase 2, phase 3. That's a large
Yeah, I'm not sure what the exact number is. The equipment in and of itself is probably not the major cost. For example, one of the pumper trucks, the fire trucks, costs about $300,000. But that's not the major cost. There's more cost in training your people, in writing the procedures, and then the regional response centers. Those were about $44 million apiece. And then the ongoing O&M effort per site is about $4 million. So, you know, we've probably spent $125 to $150 million on flex stuff over the last 4 years.
Steve, is the modules the controlling timeline?
Well, currently the delays have been associated with the modules. If I look at what is critical path next, as the modules start to complete, something else will take over the critical path. And so right now we're looking at the shield building as being the critical path. So the shield building goes around the outside of that containment vessel. There's about a 4-foot annular gap. And the shield building is really, it's steel, concrete, and steel. And it's a radiological barrier, but it also protects the containment vessel from aircraft impact and other externally generated hazards. And so this steel structure, while it has been utilized before, is difficult to make as modules because you've got to fit them up with exacting tolerances. So we've got pressure to deliver the modules from NNI in Virginia, and then once they're on site, we've got pressure to fab them in big rings so that you can pour concrete in between these panels that come in. So right now, the shield building is probably our critical path.
One question on the head replacement reactor one. Any kind of a delivery date on that?
Yeah, we're going to receive that sometime. I think it's mid-16, and we'll replace it in 2017.
Okay. You mentioned also with the flex, the different possible uses for the trucks themselves. But there's a lot of additional equipment to. And hoses, for example, lines to, say, pump from the lake or something like that. Any look at that in terms of?
Yeah, we've purchased all the hoses that we need. They're also stored in one of two different diverse flex buildings. We have the capability to go from the lake through a pumper or through one of those other large pumps into our buildings. We've had to do modifications to make sure that the attachments external to the buildings are available. We've also had to do modifications to make sure that we can take some of the diesel generators, even the ones that are coming from the regional centers. So the idea is that when we receive it, we can place it and we can plug it in directly. So all of those things have been considered.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. The first is just for information. Is the Istisi has seawalls between it and the lake? Is that what those concrete barriers are?
Their intention isn't seawalls, but they are walls that will be, they're more like berms.
Okay, yeah.
But it's it is to make it more difficult to access the facility. But our, you know, we don't look at flooding coming from the lake, because the lake is actually elevated.
Yeah.
So it's a pump storage lake. We pump the lake up at night. And so if we were to get an earthquake that would cause a dam failure, we would lose the lake rather than the lake flooding us. We have a segregated other area that for water that is a safety-related pond that serves as cooling.
And is it sized for one, two, or three?
The current pad is sized for just unit one out through 2062. So we will have on-site wet storage that come with each of the new units. And then we will be looking at a similar type structure, probably also within the protected areas for units two and three, because I've got some separation. So we're putting them inside of the protected area so they're within our security boundary. So the 2-3 will probably go inside of the unit 2-3 protected area boundary.
Those regional centers, did I hear that people are thinking that we need more than one on the East Coast?
There's been some discussion of that, but I don't. Okay. I wouldn't see a reason for that.
And
there's no active plans that I'm aware of for a second East Coast center.
I'm going to ask you a series of questions about these modules, which will explain to you how little I know about these modules. But did the modules for Unit 2, you finally got the modules for Unit 2 to work, so you're sending the modules that you haven't gotten constructed for Unit 3 out? Is it just the big modules, or is everything leaving Lake Charles?
Not everything will leave Lake Charles. Outside of these big six modules, yeah, we've got other smaller modules and mechanical modules. So each, let's say, pump will come as a skid with all the piping and the conduit attached to it. So those mechanical modules are also, some of those are fabricated at Lake Charles. Spool pieces are fabricated in Lawrence here. CB9's got a Lawrence facility. So the fabrication is done at a number of different places, largely around the southeast for the smaller modules. But Lake Charles is still involved. So one of the things we hope to do was to de-scope Lake Charles, because they were getting backed up. Their paperwork wasn't caught up with the actual physical work, and that was causing us some delays. So to de-scope Lake Charles, we moved some of these things to other places. We have received already the first of the modules from Toshiba IHI, and the quality there looks very good. And we the first module from Oregon Ironworks shipped late last week and is due on site, I think, the 14th of this month. So they're coming from those other facilities.
So, assuming that we continue this renaissance, is your lesson here, continue to work to try and get the workforce trained to meet the nuclear QA, or is there enough places in the world, if you look far enough, that could do?
No, I don't believe that there are yet enough places that understand what having an Appendix B quality program is. And that is in my mind is probably the biggest learning. Even companies that had previously been in the nuclear game were rusty, to be kind to them. We have probably initiated stop work orders at a majority of the suppliers, and it's their response that really dictates whether or not I would recommend that it be used as a nuclear supplier in the future. Some of them respond very quickly and very well. Others, like Lake Charles, don't respond so well, and they don't respond very quickly.
For the public in the ESCs, can you tease out, you and Vogel too probably, tease out how much of your cost overruns are due to this inability to meet the quality requirements?
We could probably do that. I haven't done it yet, but yeah, we could probably do it.
And my last question is, and cybersecurity is much more rigorous this go-around, how is your cybersecurity program coming?
Still evolving. We've had cybersecurity in phases. So the first phase of cybersecurity stuff is finished. It's in the design. Second phase is finishing its design, largely done with Westinghouse and some outside vendors. But it's still coming. But nuclear facilities, unlike some other facilities,